I'm Macy Chen.
And I'm David Ball.
You're listening to CFRO, The Pulse, here on Vancouver Co-op Radio 100.5 FM.
We are your independent daily news show, reporting on the front lines in our community.
And we're streaming at thepulse.coopradio.org.
Good morning. It's Tuesday, August the 4th. And on today's The Pulse show, we're talking to Jen St. Denis, a Downtown Eastside reporter with thetie.ca, about the memorial for Thomas Donaghy, an overdose prevention site worker who was stabbed to death on a break from work at the St. Paul's overdose prevention site last week. We'll also play clips from his memorial service held outside the original Vancouver OPS on Monday. And we'll hear about an incident involving police at Main and Hastings. All this and more. Stay tuned for your news headlines. Now, the federal government announced on Monday that it is moving to get everyone off of the CERB, the Canada Emergency Response Benefit, started with COVID-19 pandemic, and transition those who can't return to work onto employment insurance starting this fall. Here's Minister Carla Quattro.
Many Canadian workers continue to face challenges during this time, and as the Prime Minister said this morning, we will continue to be there for them. In September, we will be moving as many Canadians as possible from the CERB onto employment insurance. Our EI system is ready, and there'll be no disruption of benefits. Since the beginning of the pandemic, our government has been focused on keeping Canadians safe and getting them the help they need to get through this crisis. We've also undertaken significant actions to support Canada's continued food security while safeguarding the health and safety of Canadian and temporary foreign workers. Despite these efforts, as well as those undertaken by employers and workers participating in the Temporary Foreign Worker Program, there have been COVID-19 outbreaks on some Canadian farms. I'm truly saddened to hear about these workers who have become ill or passed away due to COVID-19.
And that was Carla Quattro. Many have expressed concerns about being pushed back to work after revelations that the Ontario and Quebec Labour Relations Boards had rejected all but one of hundreds of complaints of people being forced back to work who said they did not want to return because of concerns over COVID-19 risks. In Ontario, only one such complainant was allowed to stay off work on government benefits. She had a severe immune-compromised condition, and an employer had attempted to force her back to work until the labor relations intervened. Now, friends, family, and co-workers of Thomas Donaghy, including childhood friends, gathered together outside Vancouver's overdose prevention site at 60 East Hastings on Monday morning to hold a vigil and memorial in memory of the 41-year-old overdose harm reduction worker. He was stabbed to death last week outside St. Paul's Hospital during a break from his work with the Rain City Housing-operated overdose prevention site there. Now police and the family and friends are calling on any witnesses or people with information on his stabbing to come forward. His colleagues and co-workers said that he was caring, compassionate, very skilled at what he did, and as a peer support worker at an overdose prevention site, was able to calm people down and bring people a sense of comfort and help them deal with their fear during a terrifying time. Here's Rachel Plamondon, a manager at St. Paul's overdose prevention site.
Prior to the event that took place that night, within a half hour before everything happened, he reversed a fatal overdose with a staff that was brand new to the site and not really sure how things were meant to be. And, I just want to acknowledge all the peer staff and all the work that they do. You guys are the real MVPs, no joke. You are the ones who are frontline. You are the ones who are first responding. And you are the ones that are least recognized for the work that you do. And I really just want to say, as a person who, with lived experience, I see you and I appreciate you. And I just I can wrap my head around, overdose deaths, but this was so unnecessary. And I'm shaking. This has been a really rough week for us. And I just wanted to thank you all the work you do tirelessly, the work that Thomas did tirelessly. And I believe that, continuing to do this work and uphold our peers to the status they deserve to be recognized for.
And here is one of his coworkers.
A lot of us, we turn to hate, and I've done it myself with this work. I'll say, I hate this job, or I hate this. But Thomas never turned to hate. He would get angry, and he'd get frustrated. But every time I talked to him, he never turned to hate. He was so understanding. And he made my life better. And he opened up to me. And I don't get a chance to open up to many people down here. But I got to open up to him. And he really benefited me. And he met a really unfortunate end. But that end doesn't negate all the positivity and all the love that he brought to the neighborhood. Yeah, it was an honor. It was amazing to know him. And I hope that, today feels very sad. And I want to call it a bad day. But I don't think Thomas would call this a bad day. He would see it all together. And he'd be so happy. And he'd be so proud of us. And we get to carry on his legacy. And I'm so appreciative. And we're going to try and make today a happy day. Because that's what Thomas would want from us. Yeah.
And that was a coworker of Thomas Donaghy. We'll talk to Jen St. Dennis, a reporter with the Tyee, about the memorial service later on our program and pay some more clips from his service. Here's Sarah Blythe, a founder of the overdose prevention site, with Thomas Donaghy, speaking about his contribution.
Thomas, in 2016, when we opened up the overdose prevention site, the first one, Thomas was one of our first volunteers. He was one of the most compassionate, caring. Because of the way that Thomas was, it was, it's hard to even bring this together here, but he was the kindest person, and people looked to him as a leader in kindness. He would, when we closed down in the afternoon, everyone would go home, and he would say, you know what, I think there's going to be some overdoses in the alleys tonight, I'm just going to walk around up and down alleys all night long, and then he'd come in the morning and he'd have stories about how he saved people all by himself in the alleys all night long. I mean, he went above and beyond anyone. And the fact that he passed away is just so, it just shows that anyone can pass away at any time, because he was the kindest person in the whole world probably that I've ever known. He'd always be there for someone who had something to talk about. He would listen forever. He would listen to everything, and even though he couldn't hear, he'd be reading their lips. So I'm not going to go on and on. I'm going to give other people an opportunity, but he was just, it's just so sad and so shocking that this has happened to our community, and all of the deaths that have been happening lately. It's just so hard. It's hard to fathom that we're going through what we're going through down here. And I would encourage more people to come up and have something to say. You know, this is an opportunity for us to listen to each other.
And that was Sarah Blythe with the Vancouver Overdose Prevention Site. Now, the Powell Street Festival, celebrating Japanese-Canadian culture, would normally have held its festival this weekend in Oppenheimer Park in the heart of the downtown East Side. But because of COVID-19, they gathered there without an audience and without participants to watch the usual array of arts, martial arts, merchandise, and performances. But they held a telethon all day Saturday and managed to raise $40,000 towards a new program that they told us about last month on the program. They're starting a Downtown Eastside community care program, providing care packages, as well as a food kitchen to help increase food security and show the appreciation of the Japanese-Canadian community for members of this neighborhood. They said on their Twitter after the telethon, quote, "We are moved by the power and solidarity of our community. The outpour of support is astounding. We know this pandemic has been challenging for everyone, so we cannot express our gratitude enough for your trust and belief in our work." The hours-long event featured live musical performances, martial arts, and the usual array of many poets and speakers. And you can find out more information or donate at PowellStreetFestival.com. And that's our news headlines for today on The Pulse. Welcome back. You're listening to The Pulse on CFRO here on Vancouver Co-op Radio 100.5 FM and online at thepulse.cooperadio.org. You can go there to find all of our previous podcasts and guest interviews. Plus, you can find our podcast and download it wherever you get your favorite shows. I'm David Ball. On our show today, we're talking with Jen St. Denis. She's a newly hired reporter on the Downtown East Side for thetaiyi.ca. In fact, their project is funded by the same federal grant that funds this program, the Local Journalism Initiative. This is Jen's second time on the program, and we're grateful to have her on to talk about Thomas Donaghy, his memory and his legacy, as well as his untimely death. Welcome back to The Pulse, Jen. Great to have you on Co-op Radio again.
Thanks, David. Great to be here.
So you're a few weeks into your Taiyi stint covering the Downtown East Side, and I wanted to ask you just first of all, you've had a pretty big story about this overdose prevention worker, Thomas Donaghy. Tell me how you learned about that and what you've been really looking into.
Well, a colleague of ours, Jesse Winter, had previously done a photo essay on frontline workers at overdose prevention sites a few weeks ago, just at the beginning of July. And Thomas was one of the people that he photographed. And then we got a tip from someone that Thomas was actually the victim of this homicide that had happened just last week, Monday, the July 27th, outside of St. Paul's Hospital. And then when I talked to this person, she told me that he had been working a shift at the overdose prevention center or site there when this incident happened, when he lost his life.
It's just awful.
I was just so shocked to hear that. Initially, I didn't know what to think. I thought this would be more like an obituary of Thomas. Obviously, wanted to write about it right away. But when she told me that he had been working, it turns out he was on a break from his shift at the overdose prevention site. Immediately, that just became a much bigger story for me, because Thomas was really, he was a frontline worker, much like other healthcare workers are frontline workers. He was doing this role, saving lives, and in the midst of that, lost his own life.
So he had a memorial service on Monday morning outside the 60 East Hastings overdose prevention site. You went to it. I followed the live stream. We learned a few things about him. He's 41. He loved hockey. He loved skateboarding. What else do we know about Thomas?
So yeah, as you mentioned, we learned that some details about him that really gave us a sense of who he was as a person. He loved hockey, he loved soccer, he loved skateboarding. What really stood out to me was he loved animals as well. He had two cats. He named them Molson and Canadian after his favorite beer. And they were, one was blind and one had a problem with its legs. And Thomas kind of took care of these cats that nobody else wanted. And what we also heard was that he was just hugely passionate about harm reduction and about overdose prevention work. He was one of the first people to work at the overdose prevention site when it first started in the fall of 2016. And he was just so passionate about that work that he would often work a really, really, really long hours. They would have to tell him to go home and sleep. And he would sometimes roam around the alleys late at night when he couldn't sleep, looking for people to save. And he would do this on his off hours, basically just constantly going around and seeing if anybody was overdosing, anyone need help. That needed help.
He said he would say to people who told him to sleep more, he's like, I'm just trying to help people.
Yeah, he just had this, it seemed like an all-consuming passion just to save lives, as many as he could. And we have to remember, in 2016, that was when these overdose deaths were rising and rising and rising. It was a real crisis. And then with the growth of more and more overdose prevention sites, which we have to remember they were illegal when they first started. Now they're like a model for around the world. You know, it was a dire crisis and people were dying at great numbers. And then we kind of were able to turn the corner on that and the numbers of deaths were falling. But that all of that work has kind of that it started to rise again with the COVID pandemic and with services being closed for drug users, people using alone more often, and the drug supply getting more toxic. And we're now kind of at that crisis state again. And so that's the kind of context that Thomas was working in the night that he was killed. He was working on this sort of, they call it the twin pandemics of COVID-19, but also the overdose deaths rising. And he was working on that side of the health crisis.
In fact, someone at the from the St. Paul's overdose prevention site who talked at the memorial actually said that he had in fact saved what likely would have been a fatal overdose just within a half an hour of his stabbing.
That's right. He was working with someone who was much, much less experienced. I think it was maybe just her first shift, and had been working alongside with her just to kind of help her. And yeah, they had tackled this very serious overdose that Rachel Plamondon, who is the manager at that site, said could well have been fatal just 20 minutes before he took his break and then was involved in this altercation where he ended up dying.
Do we know anything about the incident itself? I know that both at the memorial and the police are saying any witnesses or dash cam footage from cars or anything from that area last week should come forward. What do we know?
Yeah, so just to be clear about where this happened, so it happened at St. Paul's Hospital in the West End, at Comox and Thurlow Streets. And yeah, the police don't have very much information about the person who did this. They don't have a suspect identified. They haven't made any arrests. They're still appealing for information. And that was one of the things we heard at the memorial, was people just pleading with, just saying, please, if you have information about who this was, please tell police. Because at this point, you know, and I was a little bit surprised at that. I thought that maybe there would, you know, such a populated area there. But yeah, police are still just looking for the person and asking for information.
It's clearly devastating. I think we could all see that from the memorial. And, you know, one person described him as putting people at ease, using kind of a self-deprecating humor, but also that he would kind of leave a warm afterglow when he would leave his shift. People would kind of feel a bit more positive.
One thing that just really, really, that this memorial really brought home to me was that he was, you know, he was a really, really key person in the harm reduction community. I think there are those people who tend to be a little bit louder, tend to be the spokespeople for the community, like Sarah Blythe and other people who talk to the media a lot. Thomas was not necessarily one of those people, but clearly to the people that he worked with, he was just so integral to that community and to the work they were doing. And so that was one of the things that memorial just really brought home.
And Sarah Blythe actually said that she couldn't have founded it without him. Yeah. Sarah Blythe even said that, he was the kindest person perhaps in the whole world I've ever known, and that he was integral to co-founding the original overdose prevention site with her.
Yeah, that's right. He was like there from the very beginning. Like from the very beginning, he was there. And it just looks like it looks like his passion for that work never ever waned, and that he was doing it, you know, 4 years later, he was doing it and doing it up until he died.
Is there any sense that he knew the person that attacked him, or that this was somehow connected to his work, or was it random?
We don't know that. It was the incident did happen while Thomas was working. He was on a break from a shift. So I have heard from some harm reduction workers that it was connected to the workplace, but I haven't been able to verify that or get it confirmed. And, you know, we don't want to have any like baseless speculation going out, but I think it's very important to recognize that this was a death that happened at a workplace. Rain City, which operates that site, has reported the incident to WorkSafe BC. In incidents like this where there's criminality involved, WorkSafe waits until the police have kind of conducted their investigation to see whether they should go in and do their own investigation. But I think that's definitely something we need to highlight, is that this is an incident that happened to a worker at a workplace.
Like a nurse or an emergency room doctor or an orderly. in a hospital.
Yeah, I mean, at St. Paul's, there have been like photo essays of healthcare workers at St. Paul's during the COVID-19 pandemic, you know, at 7 p.m., you know, for a long time. And still in my neighborhood in the West End, people go out on their balconies and they bang pots and pans for the frontline workers. And yeah, I just want to highlight that Thomas was definitely one of those workers. He was one of those frontline workers. And so if you can imagine if this same incident had happened, say, to a nurse or another kind of healthcare worker at a hospital, I want people to think about that as they're listening to this and what maybe the public reaction would be to that kind of incident.
Yeah, now this, you actually have kind of raised or exposed an issue that I think is very much alive for many of our listeners who work in this field or live in this field or are peer support workers themselves, which is that not everyone gets the same job protections or union representation in the peer support and overdose protection sphere. What did you learn about that?
Yeah, this is certainly not a new issue. I think it really came to the fore recently this spring when peer workers at overdose prevention sites that PHS Community Services Society runs, they unionized. They voted to unionize. But PHS Community Services has really argued the entire time that the peer workers are not employees. And so that's kind of been a battle the whole way along with those sites that PHS Community Services runs. And that's the kind of worker that Thomas was. He was a peer worker, which means that these are people who have lived experience and they're able to make those connections with people, often vulnerable people, to get them to use the site, make them feel comfortable using the site. I've heard them described as just being like the backbone of these overdose prevention sites. Like without them, they would not function, you know, the way they do. And yet these workers are not paid as much. They're often not in the union. They often don't get the same benefits that other workers do. And there's a real push right now with Thomas's death of just saying, you know, the managers of these sites saying that this is wrong. Like these workers are integral to these sites, and they do as much work as anyone else. So they should really get the same kind of pay and benefits.
So your original article on this is called "An Overdose Prevention Worker is Killed on Duty as Colleagues Want Answers." You have another one coming out on Tuesday. Tell me about that one.
It's really just about the memorial. I really just wanted to give people a sense of who Thomas was and what was said at this memorial and just how moving it was. And, you know, kind of put it in the context of that he was working in this health crisis and kind of what that meant. And how, you know, as much as people were taking the time to remember Thomas and talk about his life, they were also calling for change and they were calling for more recognition of workers like him and the work they do.
You know, one of the things that really jumped out at me from the memorial was the last words shared, I think, by Trey at the end. We had a moment of silence for the so many people who have died from overdoses in the downtown east side who Thomas was trying to save. And they said, it's been a really hard time for a lot of people due to the pandemic because we've lost so many people in this community and we weren't able to grieve them properly. So we remember them all, not just Thomas. That really struck me, that we've not been able to grieve not just the COVID deaths or the overdose deaths, but those who have just passed and not had the community around them.
Yeah, yeah, it's true. And it's important to remember them. So hopefully, you know, maybe I can play a small part in that and doing some more sort of obituary type writing, some more memorial writing. I think it's really important to that community, and I'd like to give them a chance to do that if people would like to share.
I know that it matters to the community, and something that we are doing here as well whenever possible is trying to remember and honor people, because there's so many lives lived and stories to tell.
Yeah, and if there isn't that kind of work done to memorialize people, it can just feel like poof, they're gone, and you know, they didn't their lives didn't mean anything. And of course they did, their lives meant a lot, and people remember them.
Really powerful. Thank you so much for covering this, Jen, in such depth, and for continuing to dig into some of the bigger questions around it as well.
Oh, it's been an honor. Thanks for this interview, David.
Yeah, look forward to the next one, but keep up the good work, Jen.
Thanks, David. You too.
Stay healthy. Bye-bye.
Bye.
And that was Jen St. Denis, a reporter on the Downtown East Side with the TIE.ca. That project is funded by the same source as this program, The Pulse. It's by the Local Journalism Initiative. Jen joined us on Monday. You can find her articles at thetie.ca.
And that's our program for CFRO, The Pulse. The Pulse.
Your independent news show, reporting on the front lines in our community.
Every weekday, 7 a.m., here on Vancouver Co-op Radio.
Find our previous podcasts and interviews at thepulse.coopradio.org.
CFRO The Pulse is brought to you by the Local Journalism Initiative, a program funded by Heritage Canada and administered through the Community Radio Fund of Canada.